I'm Tom Wilmer, reporting from Hot Springs, Arkansas. Alan Sims, your general manager, here at a legendary historic hotel. Tell us the name of it and kind of overview, overarching history.
Yes, I'm very fortunate to be the general manager of the largest, oldest, most iconic hotel in the entire state of Arkansas. It is the Arlington Resort Hotel and Spa, located right here in beautiful Hot Springs National Park, Arkansas. The Arlington Hotel started in Hot Springs 151 years ago. And there are a lot of people that just wondered if the owner at the time, the builder, he had a great memory about an Arlington Hotel in Washington or New York.
Let's kind of retrace its history. Originally opened, different footprint.
Yes, the building that we're in right now is 101 years old, but it is the third Arlington Hotel. The first one was across the street right here in the National Park, and it opened as the Arlington Hotel. It was a wood structure, 100 rooms, and for the amount of visitors they had at that time that were coming here for the 4,000-year-old thermal mineral water that would heal any affliction you had, it was good for the day. They added on to the hotel another 120 rooms, and it continued to operate until the railroad started coming to Hot Springs. And with that, we started getting a lot of Europeans and people from all over the United States.
The railroad, did it come right through the heart of town?
Just south of us here, probably only about 7 or 8 blocks, is the transportation depot that still exists today, and that's where the train came in. The visitors would get off the train and come walking up this main street here, Central Avenue, looking for a place to stay because they were here for the baths. So with the railroad coming in, they decided they raised that hotel and they built a beautiful 300-room Spanish-style hotel, two beautiful towers, and it stretched all the way from the closest bathhouse, which is the Superior, all the way here to the corner of Fountain Street, right across the street from us.
So that's gone.
That hotel operated very successfully for 28 years, and they were under the impression that since it was a beautiful brick structure, it would never burn down. But it did burn down in 1923, burned to the ground. They immediately went to work to try and figure out to build a third Arlington Hotel, the one that we're in. A funny story is they actually submitted permits to Washington, D.C. to build it in the same location.
Because this was in
it
within
was in
a national park.
National park. Unfortunately, the gentleman that would approve that got ill and was out of office for over 3 months. And so they finally just said, you know what, we got to get going on this. We already own this property. They had planned to expand to this side of the street. So they went ahead and they built this here. They started it in 1923. They completed it in 13 months. And they did build this hotel to not burn down again.
It's also fascinating looking back and contextually in time. This was like the height of the Roaring Twenties.
Yes.
Where a lot of people thought it would never end.
They did think that. The hotel opened to a big gala at New Year's Eve, 1924. We still have the original ballroom, and we continue that tradition to this day. Every New Year's Eve, we have a big gala, 16-piece band, 5-course gourmet meal, feed over 200 people, lots of ballroom dancing, very 1920s.
That's really cool.
It is.
Jumping out of time, out of context, at this moment, you're in the early stages of a major, major renovation and restoration.
We call it a restoration. So, yes, and we are deep into it. The exterior of the building is about 95% completed. Right now we're a 478-room hotel. When we reopen or when we finish all the rooms, we'll be 500. And so actually picking up a few, it will be a complete restoration. We're trying to respect and honor a lot of the history and the charm, and but it's been a big project, and more than 50% of my rooms right now are out of order in different phases of restoration.
Have any of them been through the renovation? They're up and running in their new incarnation?
Well, we have two concept rooms that we have, but we have not gotten back any of the restored rooms. We expect to get those back in the second quarter of this year, 2026.
Over 500 rooms total when you're redoing?
Well, when we finish the restoration project, we'll have 500 rooms.
That's so cool.
Yes.
So let's, again, out of context, jump back into time.
Okay.
It's open, gala, grand ribbon, and it became known around the country and around the world quickly.
Yes, absolutely. And you know what? It was a huge opening, advertised in New York, Washington, D.C. At the time, it was the tallest building west of the Mississippi when it opened. Yes, it was a big deal. Vegas didn't exist, and this soon became the precursor to Las Vegas.
So this was a major gambling town. It was kind of the don't look, don't see with the county sheriff, whatever, right?
Yes, it was. And Oney Madden was a gangster in New York, where he owned and operated the Cotton Club. The feds suggested that he leave New York on his own, or they would ship him out in a pine box. So he moved to, of all places, Hot Springs, Arkansas. He opened a club right across the street from the hotel. It was called the Southern Club, and it was the largest gambling casino west of the Mississippi.
Part of that, do you think, was because of the anchor of the Arlington?
Oh, I think that had a lot to do with it. And the Arlington, yeah, has been part of the fabric of Arkansas and Hot Springs for 151 years. So, and we were up and coming. We had the hot springs, the bathhouses. This place has always been known for visitors. So,
in the heyday of like the Ohio Club and whatnot, you had gangsters that had rooms here, right? Talk to us about that dynamic.
We've had many, many visitors, the famous and the infamous. I think probably the gangsters would fit on the infamous side, but
didn't Al Capone have a special suite here?
Al Capone was a regular here at the Arlington. When he came, he would sometimes stay up to a month at a time. He would visit four or five times a year. He would rent the entire fourth floor, and he always stayed in the same suite, room 443.
And the reason for the whole floor was basically security?
Two things. Number one, it gave him direct access to the bathhouse. The hotel still has an operating traditional bathhouse.
Within the building?
Within the building, much like back in the day that we still go through the same processes like they did in the 20s and 30s. So that was his number one draw. Second was it gave him the ability to keep an eye on the Southern Club.
Right out his bedroom window.
Correct. Well, yes, out his parlor. You know, there were so many employees back in the day that he knew, they knew him, and he really treated them well. Al Capone and Oney Madden made a fortune in moving alcohol from here to Chicago. Yes, it was a very prosperous business and a time for them.
Then on a different level, you had Hollywood stars and starlets that would stay here. Talk to us about that.
We've had presidents. We have had stars and starlets. Downstairs in our history corner, there's a great picture of the heavyweight champion of the world and his wife were sitting having breakfast with Rudolph Valentino, who back in the day was the charmer, the Casanova, the Don Juan of film. So I understand why the heavyweight champion was there with his wife. He didn't want to leave her alone, probably. You know what? And presidents, we've had many of them, JFK all the way up through the Bushes, Rockefeller back in the day. Marilyn Monroe stayed here. We can't prove that her and JFK stayed here at the same time, but they both did stay here. Even more recently, we've had Kevin Costner as a guest, but yeah, going back in time, a lot of movie stars over the years.
Bill Clinton grew up here in Hot Springs, so it follows that at some point he would have events here?
President Clinton was a regular here. We have a presidential suite where he stayed frequently. Ronald and Nancy Reagan stayed here. They have a suite in their name because they didn't want to stay in the same suite where Rockefeller and others had stayed. Babe Ruth was a regular, but yeah, on the presidential side, Bill Clinton graduated from Hot Springs High School, and he's done a number of reunions here at the hotel where he has returned to hang out with his classmates for a night.
Touch on, for a moment, the Arlington and Hot Springs connection with pro baseball.
Glad that you brought that up. The first 9 years of professional baseball, spring ball, was here in Hot Springs. And they called it boiling out in the springs. These guys had been off for 3 or 4 months, had imbibed in different things, and so they came here.
A cleansing trip.
Exactly. Get all that out of your system. And
period of time in history.
That would have been 20s up into the early 30s.
Before Arizona spring training.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Yes, and Florida.
So this was spring training for American baseball.
And you know what? There's an interesting story, too. Not too long ago, probably within the last 10 years, a baseball historian happened to read or find an article in the local paper here of this mammoth home run that Babe Ruth hit during spring training. He dug deeper. Home plate is in the original position at Whittington Field where they played. He read that the baseball had landed in the oldest attraction in the state of Arkansas, the Arkansas Alligator Farm. So they had marked the ball, still there. It was still marked. So he brought out a lot of sophisticated equipment, measured it. It's now the first home run ever in professional baseball to know traveled over 500 feet. So
that's so cool. Right here in Hot Springs, Arkansas.
Hot Springs, Arkansas. Yes.
Let's jump out of time back to current time. What sort of amenities do you have here on site? I remember here 10 years ago, there was that classic old barber shop, some retail spaces. What's happening there?
You know what? We still do have, it's called the mall level. It's on the lower level. You can access it from both Central and Fountain Streets. Back in the day, there was a men's shop. There was a barber shop. There was a ladies dress shop and a beauty salon. We still operate the beauty salon there where you can barber and salon and massage. We've got an incredible bookstore down there, the Golden Feather Gift Shop. We've got a gentleman that sells vinyl records down there. Some of the best ice cream in the state, I think, is made right here in the basement of the Arlington.
Since you're still in process of renovation and restoration, what other on-site amenities, restaurants, bars?
Well, I mentioned the salon downstairs. It's spa and salon. But we also have the bathhouse. I mentioned that earlier. It's actually located between the third and fourth floors. So, again, very traditional, the bath, the wrap.
Use the spring water?
Yes, 4,000-year-old thermal mineral water. In addition to that, we have a beautiful two-deck pool with a waterfall. That's going to be completely redone as well.
That's out back.
It is. That's outside. Of course, we are connected to the Hot Springs National Park. Their border is right adjacent to us. You can actually go up on the pool level and hike right into the national park from here.
And that's the smallest national park in America.
Yes. And interestingly enough, I think we can say we preceded Yellowstone. What Yellowstone likes to say is we were a federal national reserve, and they were the first national park. Our name later got changed to national park, but we were ahead of them by about 40 years. We have a full dining room, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. We have the lobby bar where we serve food, lunch, and in the evening. We are very well known for our live music on Friday and Saturday nights, and we usually get great crowds that like to dance and just
Randomly, you come here for swing dancing?
Oh, yes.
Still go on?
It does. One Sunday a month in the ballroom, the Stardust Band, which is the 16-piece band, does a lot of swing, does a lot of ballroom. Tradition of the Arlington.
Oh, I love it. Okay, what secrets are you holding back?
I can't tell you that, or I would be on the board downstairs as a former general manager.
Okay, what have we left on the table? What are the things would you like to share before we go?
You know, you can ask just about anyone in Arkansas or Hot Springs, what's the icon of Hot Springs, or what is the landmark? It's the Arlington Hotel.
Back, yep, when it's getting ready to leave out in California, my daughter said, you know, you're going to Hot Springs? And she went, oh my God, that, you know, that's where the Arlington Hotel is?
Wow.
That was her first thing.
That was the first thing she thought of. Wow. You know what? We have a lot of respect for that legacy, something that we want to maintain. Everyone in here is committed to giving it our best. So.
Okay, before we go, how did Alan get committed? How did you wind up here?
Well, I had the good fortune to meet the owner of the hotel before he became the owner of the hotel. We worked together.
What was your background?
Mine's pretty well rounded. I started with planes. I was with American Airlines, then hotels, then destination marketing, and then circled back to hotels. When the new owner got the hotel in July of 2017, he told me about this project and what he had in mind, and it was not difficult to get excited about what he saw for the future of the property.
So that's when you came on board.
That's right.
You're blessed. You know that,
don't you? I am. Yep. Very fortunate. So, and honored at the same time.
And learn more about your world of the Arlington. Where would you take us?
I would say go to our website, arlingtonhotel.com. You can get started there and get everything you need. Another thing, we're very easy to find. You can call, and we've got a great sales team that is would be happy to share. My name is Alan Sims. It's been a pleasure to talk with you.
Likewise. I'm your host, Tom Wilmer, reporting from Hot Springs, Arkansas, at the Arlington Hotel. We'll see you here.
I'm Robert Raines, the executive director and owner of the Gangster Museum of America.
Interesting.
Hot Springs, Arkansas.
Backstory.
Backstory is I came here to help a friend move. We both were from my hometown, Pine Bluff, about 80 miles southeast of here, and I fell in love with the street. We were sitting on a park bench, and it was about dusk, and these globular lights, if you've been here in the evening, the lights come on, and it's still kind of dusk, and it's just beautiful out in October, which it is today. We're drinking a glass of wine because we've been carrying furniture upstairs all day, sitting on a bench, and here comes a policeman, taps on the back with his nightstick, and I went, oh, boy, this is not going to be good. He just walked along and said, how's it going, fellas? Everything okay? And he moved on, and I decided right then I want to do something here.
Interesting.
Because it was just a super friendly, cosmopolitan place.
So somehow you became enamored with the gangsters.
I did. I had two questions for our director of tourism here. He said that the two questions that most convention goers ask when they come here, and normally, on COVID times, we have a convention every weekend here, 12 months every weekend. He said people want to know if you can still take a thermal bath in the bathhouses, and they want to know about Al Capone. So I took Capone and started researching it, found out the history of Hot Springs itself was really more fascinating than the fact that Capone came, because the makeup of Hot Springs, the multicultural Eastern influence of New York all the way down to Miami that was brought here, formed this little bitty mob-like place that was run pretty fair, but by the 1960s, they, according to the FBI, were doing $100 million a year in gambling, but it was illegal in the state.
Wow.
So the money trickled straight up to the top and then was dispersed throughout, and it existed like that for 50 years.
In the 20s is when the gangsters first kind of
Capone
found.
And Torrio and Johnny Torrio's wife, when Capone was just their protege, they came in 1926, I think the newspaper here, the Sentinel Record, first reported them being here. And they were actually looking for a place to live. And Capone was here with them, and he was just a young, really young man at that point in time. Well, up until 1931, he kept coming back every year, even when he took over the outfit and Torrio retired. And Capone would come down here and rent the fourth floor of the Arlington and bring the armored Cadillac and just spend a couple of weeks here, and which then, most people did back then, because you'd come by train. He'd bring his car down here on a train. So.
And then I seem to recall 4 or 5 years ago you telling me that other, like, enemy gangsters would come and vacation.
Oh, sure.
Too.
Moran was here a lot at the same time Capone was, and that's probably the two biggest arch rivals, at least for sure, in Chicago.
But they had, like, a little immunity.
It has always been a really, really strange thing here. There, in previous history, there's not been a lot of fights here. The cop and the sheriff's department got in a fight on Central Avenue back in the late 1800s, and a couple of them killed each other. But as far as rival mobsters,
but they never shot each other here.
Everything was peaceful here.
They had like a truce.
Older Indians, the Caddos, some of the Caddo old chiefs that I've talked to have actually said the Indian tribes that would war could come here and get in the hot water pools before all of this was here. And they just lay down their bows and arrows and kind of sacred ground. And somehow it seems like it's stayed that way.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So there were the Ohio Club, for example. There were different clubs here that were gangs.
Almost every state had a club here. We had the Alabama Club, the Kentucky Club, the Indiana, the Illinois Hotel where Rolando's is. We had the Kentucky Club. We had the Vegas Room. This is before Las Vegas was a gambling entity. And of course, we had the Arkansas Club, the Ohio Club. All of them seemed to have a state name in their title, and naturally people from that state would come. They'd first go there and then they'd drop into these other places.
But these were all illegal gaming and mob owned and run.
You know, the real criteria for being here probably was the excuse of the bathhouses, you know, because they thought it would heal anything. And there was an old saying here that hot springs had something for the man who had everything, and they meant everything. Until the invention of penicillin, they were given 1 million baths a year here, because it was just a remedy for everything.
Supposedly, you would cure syphilis.
Yes, right.
They dip you in the mercury bath.
Some of the fountains, for instance, will give you readouts on the chemicals that are here, and we have cancer doctors that actually come here and fill up abundant jugs of water. They think probably it helps some form of cancer. I don't know why they'd go through the trouble of driving over here just to get water. But
well, your water company here is legendary, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. And Mountain Valley has been around since the 1800s, and even Man of War and Secretariat drink. I call them the overachievers. Even they drank Mountain Valley water and bathed in it too. So
that's funny,
isn't it funny?
Why did the gang mob driven world end here in the 60s, like you alluded to?
Well, a couple of different theories on that. In 1966 or 67, whichever was the election year, I think it was 66, Nelson Rockefeller was running for president. And he had the backing of the mob in Las Vegas, which was kind of a different takeover than what we had here. The mob really never took over anything here. They were the old-timers who liked ladies and gambling and having fun. And, and certainly here, when they came here, I tease people about it, but they were really just on vacation. Right. They could do a little business. Meyer Lansky's grandson is on a couple of our videos talking about his father could come here and they could talk to Owen Madden, our resident gangster from New York, on the Cotton Club. They could talk to him without fear of being tapped, because they could just get together at the Arlington and have spaghetti. And Mickey Cohen wrote about having spaghetti with Oney and the boys at the Arlington in his book. So it was just an easy place to communicate, and at the same time have fun, fish, hunt, ride horses, you know, there was just a lot of things to do back in that day and time, other than gambling and other pleasures that they would enjoy.
Stretching my memory bank, I seem to recall you years ago telling me that the song "I Left My Heart in San Francisco"
First, Tony Bennett tells that story.
First and made its debut here, in San Francisco.
It did. Tony Bennett played here in 1960, and while he was at a place called the Black Orchid, he and Ralph Porter went in there and said, Ralph Sharon, his keyboard player, mm-hmm. went in there and opened up a piece of sheet music, and it was San Francisco. They had never performed it. And so he just tried it there with no one around but C.B. Hudson, the bartender in the Black Orchid. And he told this story when he opened our Summit Arena here. The bartender told him that, you know what, I don't buy albums, but if you'd record that song, I would buy that. That's a beautiful song, and I love San Francisco. So they performed it here at the Vapors and then went out the next gig with San Francisco, and they decided to put it in their repertoire. And, of course, it became, you know, really big history after that. But to finish up, Tom, on the Nelson Rockefeller, why it all ended here is at least gambling and the people coming down. In the 60s, the mob was kind of changing. They had taken over Vegas. They weren't the old-timers like they were, mm-hmm. you know, in our heyday, our glory days of gambling here. But Nelson Rockefeller was running for president, and his little brother was the governor of Arkansas. So he campaigned on shutting down the gambling, which was illegal anyway, in Hot Springs. And about a year after he won, they passed the gambling amendment here in 1967. In October, he vetoed it at the last minute, and that was the end of gambling. And until last November, when it was voted back in.
So now you have a whole new incarnation of a giant casino right here in town.
We do. It's a beautiful place, and you know, I'm not much into gambling or that form of gambling. Mm-hmm. I guess anybody in small business is gambling these days, but it accompanies the racetrack, and you know, the racetrack is just booming. Not as far as participation from the spectators. They're adding $4 or $5 million stakes races this year.
That racetrack is one of the highest stake races in America. Ongoing,
it is,
right?
And we had American Pharoah here. I mean, the winners of the Triple Crown keep mm-hmm. coming here and warming up and kind of running their, I guess their, I wouldn't call it a test run, but mm-hmm. you know, a lot of Arkansas Derby winners have gone to the Kentucky Derby
and maybe pick up $1 million Pierce.
While they're waiting on the Kentucky Derby.
Yeah.
But you know, we also have I guess it's a little over 200 room, couple of $100 million hotel. It's 30,000-40,000 square foot casino that's already open. It's really beautiful. It's well run. Oakland knows what they're doing. Mm-hmm. They're kind of the best in the business. The Sella family is. And I haven't heard a bad story from out there.
Right. Before we go, a little bit about another, I think to a point, a best kept secret of Hot Springs, Arkansas, in history, is your winter baseball training camps.
Man.
That predates Phoenix and Florida.
Yeah. Spring training for Major League Baseball started in Hot Springs.
At what period of time?
In the late 1800s. Mm-hmm. Kennesaw Mountain, I can't remember his last name, the first commissioner of baseball came here. A lot of owners came here first and saw, well, look, this is a pretty cool place. I think we can start practicing down here. We had the facilities, just rough practice fields, you know. Then the Braves, Boston Braves, and Babe Ruth, and Ty Cobb, and Hornsby, and then we opened up a school here.
Somebody told me that it was the Hot Springs that was the real deal maker.
Well, it was. You know, the fact that they could have a lot of fun at night, because mm-hmm. none of the fields were lighted, they'd have a lot of fun at night and could boil it out the next day, according to historian Don Durham. Mm-hmm. He's got a great book called Boiling It Out in the Springs. They could go over to the bathhouses or the Eastman Hotel, which was a giant one, or the Arlington or the Majestic. They could go over there and boil it out, go to the ball field, play hard, play tough, and then start their nightly routine back over again. And it just worked out great.
And there's another dynamic that this was pre-segregation, and that you had black baseball players that played alongside the white players.
We did, and we had the Negro League start coming in here mm-hmm. after some of the white baseball teams. I think Brooklyn moved to L.A., and they started going out to Catalina Island. Florida kind of started opening up. Phoenix was I mean, Arizona mm-hmm. was starting to get a little more civilized. Yep. So, yeah, we've got a wall of 110 baseball players who are in the Hall of Fame who all spent a lot of time here in Hot Springs.
So why did it go away? Why was Florida and Phoenix a big enough draw to take them away?
I think there was less for the players to do, and they could concentrate more on the team.
Uh-huh.
This was almost like vacation.
Too much fun.
It was too much fun. We have a couple of Cooperstown historians who come here every year for our baseball days, and, you know, they just talk about, well, for the fact that Leo DeRocher was fired three times for going out to the Belvedere Club and hanging out with the ladies in Hot Springs, and, you know, Ricky would fire him from the Yankees, and then by the time spring training was over, he'd have to hire him back.
Mm-hmm.
So there's just great baseball stories here, and I loved that time of year when our baseball weekend is here, because a lot of great players, just a lot of fun.
Thank you so much for sharing.
You're welcome. I mean, I could go on all day about Hot Springs. I tell
just,
you, just it's a magical, magical place.
If I didn't have another appointment to go to, I'd keep you captive.
We can
here.
Do it anytime you get ready.
If somebody wanted to learn more about gangsters and baseball in Hot Springs,
well, you just go to tgmoa.com or go to our Facebook page, the Gangster Museum of America. I'm Robert Raines. I'm the executive director and the founder of the Gangster Museum in 2007, so we are in our 12th year now, and it doesn't show any signs of slowing down.
Thanks so much, Robert.
Sure, man.
What a pleasure. I'm Tom Wilmer, reporting from Hot Springs, Arkansas. We'll see you here.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas Award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, iTunes, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomaswilmer.com.
This is Roseanne Cash, and I'm sitting here with Tom Wilmer. Please support your local NPR station. I listen to WNYC in New York, and in fact, NPR is all I listen to. If I didn't have NPR, I would feel like my lifeline to the world has been cut. So, yes, please support your local NPR station.